Chapter 13.
I don't think I'll be able to hear anything for weeks,
Batari declared in an overly loud tone as she stood to her feet and rubbed her ears.
I never would have guessed a bunch of powder would create such mayhem.
Clearly you've never been around gunpowder, I grumbled before I sat up. You could literally take out an entire building with that stuff.
What?
Alvi screamed. I said... I began to yell, but then I just sighed and shook my head. Forget it. We're going to have to wait until our hearing's back before we can talk.
I don't have to. My ears may be shrieking, but at least I can still talk to everybody this way.
And for that, we are grateful.
Mira chuckled telepathically.
I am just happy those fuckers of mothers are dead.
I wouldn't take too deep of a breath, I warned. We may have won a major battle here, but the war is far from over. As long as the alchemist goblin is still alive, he can make more chemical weapons for the orcs, and that bodes very, very badly for our people.
We still struck a major blow to the orcs today. Like you said, they could have easily conquered every other island in this ocean if they had all those magical potions at their side, including ours.
They're still gonna try. If the goblins are anything like the orcs, this will just make them even more pissed off. And when those bastards get pissed, they tend to make bold moves, like invading our home island.
Surely they wouldn't be dumb enough to try that again. We've defeated them numerous times.
They're orcs. They're not going to give up until their entire race is wiped off the face of this planet. That's why I want to get back home as soon as possible. The storm is all cleared up, the Kunags have had their babies, and the goblin threat has been squashed. So there's nothing holding us here on this island. The rest of my crew, joined by Weyren, suddenly appeared through the thickets of maroon branches, and they all wore expressions of deep concern on their faces.
Oh, Kaelan!
Pei gasped with wide eyes, and then she ran over and threw her arms around her son.
Oh, are you all right?
I can't hear you, Mom!
The boy shouted, but his voice sounded tinny and far away.
But if you're asking how I'm doing, the answer's fine. I think my ears won't stop ringing.
Oh, praise the gods!
Pei sighed with relief, and she hugged her kid even tighter.
That was quite the explosion,
Tyrion mused as he sauntered over to me.
I bet I totally could have done that too.
Not with those sparks you're shooting out of your mouth right now. Maybe you could start a small cooking fire, but there's no way you'd have blown up a whole building.
That's not sparks anymore,
the silver dragon declared as he held his head high.
My fire breath is slowly but surely recovering, and now I am shooting out small blasts of flame again.
Tyrion inhaled quickly, held his head to the sky, and let out what was left of his fire breath. A tiny blast of flame, no bigger than the stream of a garden hose, erupted into the air and burned with a brief, simmering intensity.
Oh, wow!
Saren teased with a wink.
Maybe now you could take out a rowboat!
Tyrion shot the purple water dragon a dirty look, but all Saren did was silently giggle.
Are you all done flirting, Saren?
Morella huffed telepathically.
Because I'd love to see if Dad's ready to get off this terrible place.
Oh, I wasn't. I'm saving myself for another water dragon.
Sure thing.
My daughter rolled her eyes and then turned to me.
Are you all right, Dad? I'm just going to talk to you like this since you probably can't hear our voices anyway.
Good call, Morella. And the answer is yes. I want to get off this fucking island and go home as soon as possible. I think we all do.
You can't say that again.
Nadir added.
I'm already missing my babies.
Oh, man. I teased the Kunag woman as I pulled myself to my feet. What the hell are you going to do when you come away on an adventure with me and have to leave them at home?
I don't think we'll get to that point.
The Kunag leader shook her head.
The twins will be up and walking within a few weeks, and by that point, my Kunag friends and I will have already trained them in the art of combat.
Before they even walk? I raised an eyebrow at the beautiful raven-haired raccoon woman.
We teach them to fight the second they can crawl. They may not be strong enough to carry a battle axe, but they will certainly be ready to learn how to fight with their teeth and claws. Okira and Terra will probably be along with us for our next big journey.
We'll see about that. I shook my head. My crewmates helped Alvi, Awara, and Mira back to their feet, and then proceeded to wrap an arm around their shaken allies' shoulders. I went to take a step forward and instantly proceeded to stumble around like a drunkard. And I let out a grumble of frustration as I caught myself against a nearby tree and leaned against it for dear life. The ringing in my ears was disorienting beyond belief, and I quickly realized it was going to be a very, Very long journey back, if we had to walk the whole way. Hey, Tyrion? I asked the silver fire breather. I hate to even bring it up, but...
I can carry you guys.
Tyrion nodded.
The time we'll save is definitely worth the mild strain it'll put on my back.
Thank you. I breathed a sigh of relief. I'm so disoriented right now, I don't even think I can pass a sobriety test.
What's a sobriety test?
Shala questioned, though I could barely make out what she was saying.
Some sort of ancient ritual you dragonkin do?
It's a thing from my old world. And it's mostly done after large celebrations when you've made some questionable decisions. Basically, it's where they test you to make sure you haven't ingested too much alcohol.
Is that not the point of a celebration?
Matari chuckled.
The palm wine flows freely at Chero festivals, as you have experienced for yourself.
Yeah, that's what my friends always told the cops, right before they got taken away in the back of the paddy wagon for being drunk in public. Tyrion sauntered over to our position, dropped down so his scaly belly was against the dirt, and then let out a small chuff. I then proceeded to stumble toward the dragon and place my hand onto his neck, before I awkwardly pulled myself up onto him. Mira was right behind me, and I helped pull her up onto Tyrion's back before she nuzzled her head onto my shoulder and wrapped her arms around my waist.
I think I'll be fine,
Awara noted.
I've flown in much more disoriented states than this.
Get on the dragon, Awara. The last thing we need is for you to accidentally fly into a tree at high speeds and break your neck. The Morpho woman scowled at the request, but it didn't take her long to realize I was right. She floundered over to Tyrion, and I couldn't help but laugh when I saw her monarch-patterned wings now fluttered out of sync with one another. When Awara got over to the dragon, she jumped up a few feet, beat her wings furiously, and then fumbled around in the sky as she tried to position herself behind Mira. Eventually, the butterfly woman was able to lower herself down onto Tyrion's neck. Pei helped both Alvi and Kaelan over to our position. The silver-haired spindrel then assisted them up onto Tyrion's back, and she made sure her son was snug in between Awara and Alvi.
Hold on tightly, Kaelan,
Pei warned. Batari was the final person to jump onto Tyrion's back.
Is that everyone?
The dragon proclaimed with a soft grunt.
Please tell me that's everyone.
It is, I promised him. Are you sure you're going to be able to carry all of us?
That's not very far,
Tyrion said, and then he looked over at the rest of our crew.
I'll see you all back at the camp.
Fly safely, Tyrion,
Morella declared as she waved.
We will meet up with you shortly.
With that, Tyrion turned away from the crew and sprang up into the air. He beat his massive, leathery wings as he rose, and soon we found ourselves hovering above the treetops of the pristine maroon forest. From this angle, I could see just how large this island was. It was definitely one of the smaller isles we'd been to, but where it lacked in size, it certainly made up for with its beauty. The air was crisp, clear, and filled with the sound of swaying conifers as we passed over them with a brisk swish. Unfortunately, now that we were up high, I could also see all the destruction those goblin bastards had caused. Massive swatches of the forest had been cut down to build the warehouse, and as a result, nothing remained but dead stumps atop grimy dirt. I was just glad those fuckers were dead, or else this entire island may have ended up looking like that swatch around their warehouse. Tyrion flapped his mighty wings as we soared above the canopy. The ocean grew closer and closer as we flew, and soon enough I saw the silhouette of the Dragon Queen off in the distance. We continued our journey until we arrived at the shoreline, where Tyrion's momentum slowed to a crawl, and he lowered us down onto the white sand with a soft thud.
Oh, Benjamin!
Boongal's voice greeted us happily.
Oh, we are so glad you have returned. What was that dreadful noise we just heard?
I blew up a goblin factory. With a bunch of explosive red powder.
I see.
The fat dragon noted, though his tone indicated he was still confused.
Are we to assume you were victorious in your plight, then?
Well,
Tyrion chuckled and clicked his tongue.
Every single goblin on this island is now dead, so I'd say we did a pretty good job.
Oh, hip hip hooray,
Boongal declared as he raised his snout to the air and let out a happy chuff.
Our foes have been vanquished, and right in the nick of time. Your children are starting to grow restless, Benjamin, and I was not sure how much longer we could keep them entertained. There are only so many renditions of A Dragon's Tale I can perform.
Yeah, you guys had the hard job, I joked, as we all slid off Tyrion and then plopped onto the sand. Where are Jonas, Theora, and the kids, anyway?
Oh, they're in the shelter,
Boongal informed us.
I do believe they finally got the little ones to sleep, so they are both taking a nap.
We'll try to be quiet and not wake them, then.
What?
Alvi practically screamed, and I quickly threw my finger up to my lips and shushed her. I then pointed over to the shelter, clapped my hands together, and laid them underneath my head like they were a pillow. Alvi must have understood my message because her eyes narrowed as she stared off at the shelter. The brunette hedgehog woman then turned back to me, nodded, and placed her hand over her mouth.
What are you doing? Kaylon questioned loudly. Why are you...
Alvi slapped her hand over the prince's mouth and cut him off in an instant. She shushed him as quietly as she could, and then she slowly removed her hand from his face. So, I asked Boongal telepathically, how did Uncle Boongal do with the little guys? Did everything go all right?
Oh, I suppose so,
the brown dragon admitted.
Well, thankfully your children are immobile, so they mainly just cried and cooed when they needed nourishment or wanted to be held. I even got them to laugh a few times with some of my signature facial exercises.
Glad to hear it, I smiled. Thank you, Boongal. You three are literally lifesavers, and I'll have to thank the other two whenever they wake up. We all sat there on the beach for the next few minutes, and we soaked in the sun as we waited for the rest of our crew to return. The ringing in my ears slowed down to a dull throb, and soon after it disappeared completely. Eventually, the yawning figures of Jonas and Theora emerged from the shelter, and they were holding my three children close to their chests.
Oh, Draco Rex! Jonas flashed me a wide grin. I don't think I've ever been happier to see you in my life.
Wow, were my kids that much of a handful?
Not particularly, the soothsayer mused. They were actually fairly simple to keep entertained.
Speak for yourself,
Theora scoffed.
I was the one who had to feed them and change their soiled pants.
Oh, I'm sorry, Theora. I could have done that myself, but I have never dealt with a child who had a tail before. It would have been quite a mess had I tried it alone.
You know Nerolope children don't have tails either, right?
The dear woman asked, as her emerald eyes narrowed.
None of us do.
How would I have known that?
The elder just shrugged.
I have never been in a position to see a Nerolope's behind.
Fair enough.
Theora chuckled to herself, and then she bounced the twins in her arms. Terra and Okir both let out a squeal of glee as their babysitter rocked them gently. And the sound of their laughter practically melted my heart. It was so innocent, so pure. There wasn't a greater sound in the world. May I? I asked as I walked over to Theora, held out my hands and nodded to the twins.
They're your children, Ben. You don't have to ask.
Theora handed over Hokir to my right arm and Terra into my left. I pulled my children close to my chest before I leaned in and kissed them both softly on their foreheads. I then began to rock them slowly in my arms as I looked down into their beautiful eyes and whispered, "Twinkle, twinkle, little star," to them in the most calm, musical voice I could muster. Terra and Okir both smiled up at me as I sang, so I kept going through every nursery rhyme I could think of. Eventually, I rotated Terra out for Jaren, and then I kept the revolving door going as I took turns singing to my children, two at a time. It wasn't long before I heard rustling off in the tree line at the edge of the beach, and the rest of my crew emerged from the maroon forest.
I forgot how long of a hike that really was.
Errol panted as she walked down the beach.
It wasn't that bad.
Ashanti snarked with a sly half-smile.
My legs feel perfectly fine.
That's because you're riding a giant insect.
Shala grumbled as she gestured to the Murak.
I offered to carry them.
Saren noted telepathically to Morella and I.
They all said they didn't want it.
Their loss.
Morella mused.
I thought it was actually quite a brisk little walk. Definitely not as bad as some of the hikes we go on back home.
Oh, not as hot either. I don't even know what to do with myself right now since I'm not having to stop and spray us both down with water every few minutes.
Oh, there they are,
Nadir declared, as she threw out her arms and smiled a toothy grin.
My three favorite people in the world.
The Kunag leader threw her arms around myself and the twins, kissed me on the cheek, and then softly rubbed the heads of Terra and Hokir. Nadir then proceeded to take each of the twins, one by one, and place them into the fabric carrier that clung to her chest. The babies seemed to relax the second they were in their mother's embrace. And I definitely wasn't prepared for the sound that came out of them next. They chittered. My children chittered with glee as they were held by Nadir.
Oh, there's my little guy.
Lazan cooed as she walked over to Jonas.
I hope he wasn't too much of a demon.
Not at all. In fact, I had quite a pleasant time. It was tiring, sure, but not unpleasant at all.
Lazan strapped Jiren to the carrier on her breast, and our son began to chitter like his half-brother and sister.
There.
The Kunag woman hummed as she ran her hand along the back of the infant's head.
Your mother, as you know.
It was strange seeing Nadir and Lazan in such a maternal position. These were two of the hardest, most violent, and badass women I'd ever met, and yet they turned into puppy dogs when it came to their children. My heart swelled with love and joy as I watched the raccoon women interacting with our children, and I couldn't help but think about the life we had ahead of us. That is, if the goblins and orcs didn't come around and ruin it for us. As much as I would have loved to just stay here in this moment, we had to get home, and we had to get home fast. All right, guys, I announced as I stood to my feet. I know we've had a long journey, but it's time to head out.
I thought you'd never ask.
Pei shuddered, and her baby blue eyes were full of worry.
Every second we spend in this place feels like we're tempting death.
Oh, I'm sorry you feel that way.
Valea said with a frown, as she absently stroked Weyren's head.
I absolutely love it here, aside from the goblins. There's a large variety of plants and animals around for us to study, and that's not even getting into the strange mixtures the goblins made.
Maybe when everything's safer, you can come back here and study the biodiversity of the island. I promise the naturalist. But for now, Pei's right. There's nothing on this island for us now. Is your little friend going to join us? Valea looked down at Weyren and held out her hand, and then she began to mumble as she read his auras. Finally, the blonde hedgehog woman perked up, turned to me, and smiled.
He believes he owes us his life. I believe we just made a new permanent ally, Ben.
Glad to hear it, I proclaimed as I bent down and held out my hand. Welcome to the team, little guy. Weyren cautiously approached, but then he practically melted into the ground once I started to give him a scratch behind the ears. My friends and I quickly pulled out everything we had left in our shelter before we headed out to the Dragon Queen. We slogged through the briny water, which had now receded a bit from the shore and now only came up to our shins. Once we reached the ship, the winged members of the team flew up to the deck and tossed the rope down over the side, so we proceeded to board our beloved vessel. "Are you going to be all right manning the sails?" I asked Nadir and Lazan, as I pointed to our children. "It's already a pretty tough job, and now you're going to have to multitask with the kids."
We have both been mothers before, Ben.
Lazan reassured me with a warm smile.
Multitasking is pretty much a requirement to be a mother.
All right. I conceded as I raised my hands in the air. But please, please, let somebody know if you need them to take over.
We won't need to.
Nadir winked.
Though we'll keep your suggestion in mind.
I headed over to my position behind the wheel of the ship, removed the wheel lock, and then grabbed onto the wooden nubs at a 2 o'clock and 8 o'clock position. All right, crew, I called out to my friends. Weigh the anchor, and let's go home. Happy cheers abounded from all around me, as Batari, Ashanti, and several of the Spindrel women ran over to the ship's windlass, grabbed onto its levers, and began to walk in a counterclockwise direction. There was a groan, and then the air was filled with the sound of clanking metal and falling water as the chain and anchor rose as one unit. I felt the ship rock as it was freed from the anchor's weight, so I commanded Nadir and Lazan to open her up and get us underway. The wind was already at our back, so the Dragon Queen gradually came up to speed as our sails billowed like a microwaved marshmallow. Our vessel floated out onto the open sea, and then we were off. The oceans were calm as we sailed across its pristine waters, and there was nothing but blue sky and white clouds before us. We sailed on for several more hours until finally, off in the distance, I saw the sandstone wall that the Dragonkin women and I had spent so many months building. We steadily drew closer, and my heart pitter-pattered in my chest when I saw the two figures up in the guard towers. They were two beautiful, fit Dragonkin women covered from head to toe in shiny golden scales, with hair the color of hay. They each held a spear in their hands as they watched cautiously, and I knew if they wanted, they could have taken us all out from all the way over there. It was the twins, Daria and Zarya. Kaelon gulped.
Those two ladies don't look too happy to see us.
That's because they can't tell if we're an orc ship or not, I explained to the boy.
Raise the Jolly Roger!
Mira quickly untied one of the ropes on the main mast, and the black fabric at the top of the structure unfurled in an instant. Our Jolly Roger billowed in the wind as we stood proudly atop our ship, and when I looked back to the shoreline, I saw Daria and Zarya's body language had changed completely. Both of the twins now leaned against their spears nonchalantly. Daria had her hip popped out to the side, while Zarya leaned her head against the wall like a princess who had been locked away in a tower waiting for her long-lost lover. We were home, and I was sure all these lonely, beautiful women would be lining up to see me the second I hit the shore. There really was no place like home.